Welcome to the Everyday Innovator Podcast
for product managers, developers, and innovators.
Your host is Chad McAllister, who gives you innovation training your customers will love you for. Get ready to take your career to the next level,
for the doctor is in.
Hi, this is Chad. I have the pleasure of discussing Innovation Day with Darshan Rani. He's an industrial designer with Otto Bock Healthcare, who enjoys creating products that provide an exceptional customer experience, just like a lot of us innovators do. He has product development experience in a number of fields, which we'll talk about, including healthcare, fitness, and martial arts. Darshan, thanks so much for talking with me today and the listeners and sharing your experiences with product development. I appreciate you doing that with us.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure.
You know, my background is originally electrical engineering and then software, and most of my products fall into that kind of software realm, right? And if there were industrial designers at my university, I wasn't aware of it, didn't know what they did for sure. And I suspect I'm not alone. So share a little bit about what an industrial designer does.
That's a loaded question, Chad. let's try to take a little bite of it each as we progress through the different roles of an industrial designer.
Okay.
Traditionally, when you think of industrial designer, you think of Apple, of course, and you think of cars, beautiful cars. However, industrial designer takes a lot more than that. He or she could be doing research. He or she could be understanding the consumer. They could be just observing the consumer. They could be an anthropologist. They could be trying to figure out what the market is like. Or they could be on the other end where they actually are developing, drawing, sketching, developing in CAD. Or they could be a further end a little bit where they could be developing packaging solutions for particular products. Okay. So it's a wide range of things that you can do. So if you really like doing a little bit of everything, I think being an industrial designer is a lot of fun.
So, you know, one group of things you talked about there were all the things I'm accustomed to in product innovation, right? Product development. You know, it's that customer research, market research, understanding what provides value. And then I guess the piece that I would probably think of more traditionally as the industrial designer is the sketching, the 3D design, the CAD work, the, you know, some type of virtual or physical mock-up. Leading to a tangible product I can touch, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
But put yourself in the user's shoe. You know, how about getting training for that? How about actually understanding what the user needs? What are their visceral needs? Yes, a company probably knows what they do as a business, but when they look at their end users, is it something that they really need? Or is it something that the company thinks they need? So trying to cross that barrier between the company and between the user and actually putting yourself in their shoe is where the industrial designer has a lot of experience and brings a lot to the table.
Man, isn't that an important role? We sure end up with a lot of products that aren't really needed, right? That with someone's pet idea or for some other reason the company got this project started. So. It's not. We typically in our industry we don't do. We do a good job of making products. You know, it's not that the product itself fails. It's the reason why it was developed is sometimes the issue. You know, we need to make products that customers actually value. So you're doing industrial design work now. Was there something in your past that kind of triggered in your mind that you now look back on and say, yeah, this was the path I was destined for? You know, were the things that came together.
Yeah, I could. Looking back, now that you asked me that question, I can definitely say there were things when I was younger that I did sort of incline me towards doing what I do now. I used to really like to draw, sketch, or explore different colors, different media, just trying to put things together. This is a confession. I broke my dad's nice new watch because I just wanted to know how it worked. So I took a screwdriver and opened it all, and oh, it was so cool because all the gears went together precisely. Guess what? I didn't know how to put it back together.
Sure. You had to see how it worked.
Yes. I didn't know how to put it back together, though. However, all the sketching, drawing, and all that artwork needed some direction. So after I finished doing my engineering, because that seemed like a technical training that I needed in my life, I figured, let's look at what I really can do with this liking of mine, and that's when I discovered that there's something called industrial design, which is about solving problem. It's about creating or designing solutions for the for people, and that's what I do now.
Very good. You know, the I don't know when you had that watch taken apart, if you took time to make a sketch of it or not.
No, it was just a purely understanding process of
yep.
how clocks work.
At least, unfortunately for our mothers, we share that trait, because as a boy growing up, I was always the one taking apart anything I could get my hands on. And my mother's frustration never put it back together. So I was just satisfied with knowing what was inside everything. So the you said you did engineering school. What steps did you take to become an industrial designer?
After I did my engineering, I spent a lot of time trying to understand what I really wanted to do as a part of my life. And I started freelancing with a lot of product designers. So back in India, we have what is called as traditionally called as product design. So a lot of people developing products, developing solutions. It wasn't about a system at that point, but it was just about products. So I started freelancing for them, just trying to do some CAD drawings, doing my basic skills like AutoCAD, drafting. And I started to do that more and more. And it was a little selfish because I was just wanted to spend time with this, what I thought were the cool people. So I started spending time with them and understanding what they did and why they did it in such a way and what was their education in that. And over a period of time of about a year, I learned that maybe I need to get some education in this, and I started looking for schools in India and abroad. And finally, I ended up going to Rochester Institute of Technology in Rochester, New York, to do my master's in industrial design.
So that brought you over from India to the States, and you did your graduate degree there. And when you say the cool people, who are the cool people?
I always thought people who did what I always wanted to do but couldn't do at that point were cool. Once I started doing the same thing, I think the cool factor sort of went away.
Yeah, so something to aspire to, and once you get there, you realize how much hard work is really involved.
Absolutely.
Very good. Well, you've had an interesting set of experiences. You started your industrial design work in the field of martial arts, right?
Correct.
Did you have interest in martial arts?
No, it wasn't an interest in martial arts. Maybe as a kid I wanted to do that, but I grew over it and didn't really pursue that. However, the interest was because martial arts are so intrinsically connected to human beings. Maybe that was something in the back of my mind when I thought, oh, this could be something that I could do for a while. The connection to the human being is what inspired me to be in the martial arts and designing products for martial arts.
Okay. And from there, you went on to some other sporting goods and fitness equipment, right? And now
Correct.
Health.
Correct.
I don't know if there's a theme through those experiences for you, or if they relate together or not.
I think it's a little to do about the human body again. With martial arts, I designed a lot of protective gear for the first 3 years, doing a lot of stuff that people would wear on their bodies as a protective gear when they did sparring, when they trained for fights. The next 3 years, I spent doing a lot of gloves, insane amount of gloves, and I think that was fun because you do one thing over and over again and you get really good at it. I think I designed about 100 gloves, and out of them, 40 went into production. So it was fun, but I think on the bad side of it, I got burnt out and I couldn't do it anymore. So I thought I should start looking for something else, and then that's when Autobock came across. And at Autobock, what we do is we design prosthetics and wheelchair components here in Salt Lake City. Some prosthetics are very close to human body. They need to interact with human body, and I think that arose my interest in Autobock.
Absolutely. What kind of prosthetics have you been involved with?
I currently design prosthetic feet, and I also am in the capacity of an industrial designer involved in designing mechanical pumps and some electronic pumps for prosthetic systems. So prosthetics is a very vast area. To simplify it, you have a prosthetic foot, and then you have a prosthetic socket that you put your residual limb into. The connection between the residual limb and the prosthetic socket is done using various methods, and one of the methods is a mechanical pump where you continuously suck air out of the volume that's between the prosthetic system and the residual limb. So those pumps need to look like a system. They need to integrate with the rest of the part of the prosthetic system.
Okay, so it creates a vacuum to hold it on.
Exactly.
I expect these devices are making a real difference in people's lives that need them.
Yes, it's sort of cliche to say it's fun to see the face of these people when they really put on something and they feel that it is a part of their body.
Very good. I'll get back to that. I want to hear more about some of your experiences. But I saw on your LinkedIn profile something that caught my attention, and that was this phrase. Design of the system always takes priority over design of an object. Why is that important to you? Tell us what that means to you.
Again, I think when we go back a little bit to my education as an industrial designer, which actually having a broad spectrum going from the beginning, we used to have something called cradle to grave, but right now what we have is a step beyond it is called cradle to cradle. So when you design an object, yes, you're resolving you're solving a problem for an end user. But let's look at a step beyond that. How is that object made? What are the things that are connected to that object in the manufacturing area? What are the things that are connected to that object after it has been used? What do you do with it? What do you do with the T-shirt that you're wearing right now and you're going to throw it away? What happens to that? So it's the entire system. That's one view of it. The second view of it is that object that you're using when it's in its environment is part of a system. How does it interact with the other system, other parts of the system? For example, you have a prosthetic foot that you're wearing. A prosthetic foot is designed by itself as a prosthetic foot to do certain things. But when it's put on a person, it's a part of an entire prosthetic system. Does it go well? Can you connect something to it that will help you to make the mechanical pump better? So that's what I think as a design of a system over design of an object.
Okay, so kind of all the points that part touches within the system that operates, which also makes me think of the entire customer experience and everything that impacts that customer experience, including, as your example, the disposal and care of the product out of the environment and doing that in a responsible manner.
So, yep.
Very good. I want to get that background discussed some because people that are listening to this like to hear how kind of the pieces fit together, right? A lot of people listening to this are kind of new to the space of product management and curious about how people got into that space also, right? And the roles that they've had in developing and managing. Curious about a point in your industrial design experiences. A specific example where you really learn some valuable lessons about product development. Sometimes these come out of our failures at first, right? It's things that we didn't get quite right or really not right at all that we learn from and then we build on that in the future. So you have a story you can share for us?
Absolutely. I think every young engineer/designer has fun stories to share regardless of how embarrassing they are. When I started, and I was very fresh at my first job at Century Martial Arts, and we were developing a certain part. So I developed the part. I did some CAD drawings and very rough sketch drawings and sent them out to the vendor to create them. And in my mind, I wanted it in centimeters, which of course I had put the numbers down. I never put the value down. And when it came back, it was in inches. So you can imagine the disaster it created. Luckily, it wasn't a big cost, and it wasn't something that was critical in terms of the project timeline. So we could just laugh about it and put it across as a lesson learned.
You got back a much larger part than you expected.
Absolutely. It was fun.
But isn't that interesting? You were making an assumption about the units.
Yeah, and my engineering education has been in India, so everything is in centimeters. So
right.
It sort of in my mind went without saying, but it was an interesting lesson. On the serious note, though, what I have learned over a period of time is asking those right questions when a problem is presented to you. Because what is important is what is your target audience? Whom are you resolving the problem for? You could be resolving a problem for an end user and trying to make their life better. Or you could actually be helping your company increase your bottom line by targeting a particular price point or a particular reimbursement system. Mm-hmm. And that is very important because that makes it very clear in your design solutions and throughout the process of product development, because it's going to determine the speed. Otherwise, you're going to be fighting for one thing's need over the other, and it could be a constant battle.
So it sounds like there's a relationship there, even with the kind of funny story you told about the units, right? You're trying to not make assumptions and maybe overcome assumptions that others have made in the past and to come up with a better solution, a better product.
Yeah, and I really believe, just to give you an example, is in my previous job, we had to design a product that actually fit over a pallet. So it had nothing to do with the end user. Yes, we had to sell it to somebody, and it had to fit in our product portfolio and our company's vision. Mm-hmm. But the starting line was, well, you have a shipping pallet. You need to fit so many of them on the shipping pallet so we can make X amount of money. Mm-hmm. We took that volume and started with that. We took the volume and what all can you fit in this to make one particular thing that fits in our company's portfolio, and let's design that. It was a very interesting exercise. Had nothing to do with the end user, really. It had all to do with the bottom line and the maximizing the volume that's been given to you in terms of product and in terms of dollar amount.
Isn't that an interesting example? Gosh, so when a company's looking at a portfolio of the projects they have going on, and this one was one being driven by shipping containers, it sounds like. You know, that there were pallet space available. Let's make use of that and figure out a product to put on those pallets.
Yes, and it was an interesting challenge.
Back to, you know, an example where you've really learned a lot. You talked about asking questions. That can take the form of field research. Have that been something you've been involved in?
Yes, I do. As an industrial designer, I do end up going out on the field and understanding the end user and their needs. That being a part of my education and a part of my job that I do now, is to go out there, ask the correct questions. Always step back from the part of assumptions. Don't assume anything. Always keep an open mind and try to learn from the user. And that's where you get the right amount of information and come back to the drawing board.
Okay. And you said ask the correct questions, which makes me wonder, what is a correct question?
Correct can be very, very broad word. It's asking the questions that are open-ended. When you go out in the field, and I've learned this from being on a lot of different projects and going out with questions that had a definitive yes or no answer, while learning to say that, okay, you're not going to learn anything from here. What you're trying to do is keep an open question. So your research questions need to be open-ended, so that when people answer you, they have questions, they have more information. And one of the tricks that I have learned over a period of time, which I think would be helpful to a lot of designers if they're listening to this, is follow up every answer from your end user by asking, what else? And it is phenomenal what you can learn from when just those two words, when you ask a person, what else? And they will go off on a track that you had never imagined, and that would be very helpful to you.
I feel like I should ask you right now, what else? Find out more about this.
On the other hand, Chad, you know, what is important is really asking that question. Are you trying to meet end user's need? Are you trying to resolve a problem? Or are you trying to put in a price point or a reimbursement system? I speak about reimbursement now because I work a lot in healthcare industry, and it's driven by reimbursement so far. So we really sometimes end up designing products or designing solutions that actually answer a reimbursement system, not really the user. So that is the question you need to really ask. And it's a bold question to ask because you really want to come across as a company or come across as people who want to help people. But at the same time, of course, you have to make bottom lines as well. You have to make that money so you can help more people.
You know, I think this is an important aspect in any kind of innovative effort. You know, so some systems cast a very wide net and ask for ideas, right? And we end up with ideas that are kind of all over the map. And a lot of the companies that did systems like that don't pursue them any longer, in part because they find out they get so many ideas that aren't really actionable, and it takes too much manpower to wade through these idea systems. Knowing what the constraints are around your product development project, you know, what the requirements are and what the constraints you're dealing with, that matters a great deal. You can come up with a wonderful product that offers enormous value to the customer, but it's not going to get made because of other constraints you have.
That's true, very true.
so back to this issue of correct questions is really the open-ended questions, right? Not making assumptions about what the customers might tell us and trying to prove a point. It's interesting, when we get asked questions, we'll come up with an answer regardless, right? That's just the way human nature is. None of us like to look silly or dumb. If we get asked a question, we'll come up with something. If we get asked a yes or no question, those are our only choices, we'll are certainly much more valuable to understand what's going on. And I like your what else. You've had good experience with asking what else. Some people just ask why, right, and follow everything up with why.
Yeah.
So similar sort of approach.
Yeah. Why actually does help you get to the root of the problem. It's one of the really important words. And what we try as engineers is ask the question why at least 5 times so you can really get to the root of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
What else is a open-ended? It's more of a design. It's really a designer's mantra to really have their end users start talking to them and be open with them. What else is, so you're really trying to connect emotionally to that person. You're really trying to connect and have them, you know, feel very candid and be very open about what they want to say.
Very good. Yeah, I like that. I'll have to try the what else, add that to my repertoire. in that field research, I don't know if you have experience with ethnography, with doing user observations, if that's part of the interviewing experience you've done also.
It is a part of the design education. It is a part of what we try to implement when we are in the field. I have spent a lot of time, considering my previous job, fighting with people. Now, let's put that in perspective. I was designing martial art equipment, and martial art equipment involves a lot of fighting. It involves a lot of sparring. And one of the really cool things that I do recall doing is designing gloves for mixed martial artists. I was given the assignment to come up with something new, to come up with something eye-catching, and also solve quite a few problems. So I went down to Florida at a school in Coconut Creek. It is called as American Top Team at the time. Maybe it's changed now. But I met with about 50 professional martial artists who were training there to fight their mixed martial art fights. And these guys are big. They are big. They're humongous guys, and their hands are really, really big. They're probably hands were the size of my head. 2 XL size gloves.
That's
were,
massive.
2 XL size gloves were small for them. So what they were doing is they were cutting the glove so they could get their hand in the glove, and then they were using duct tape to wrap their gloves around their hands. And I thought this is a really unique opportunity to come up with something really cool and come up with something that is very innovative. We went back to the drawing board. Again, being a designer, lots of sketching, lots of dreaming about what can be done.
Mm-hmm.
Put that in a sketch. And what ended up was we had, well, Century now has a patent on what is called as a clinch system. It's a system that we came up with to clinch the glove, to close the glove for, so that it's tight around a user's hand.
Hmm. And in this case, a really large user's hand. Break that down for me just a little bit more. So some more details about that field research, right? What were you there observing or the kinds of questions you were asking them? Obviously, you must have seen them, what they were doing to try to get gloves on in the first place and how that worked.
It was a training session. Well, of course, these guys train day in and day out at the what is called as a dojo. And I was there for 3 days. The first day, I spent a lot of time on the bleachers just trying to prepare myself to face these guys. So I was sitting on the bleachers just observing when they came in, what was the first thing they did. Because I was not there just for the gloves. I was there to observe the end user. What are the visceral needs? Do they need a new backpack? Do they need a new water bottle? What is it that they need? Hmm. And what is it that we can help them with? So just observe them.
So this was customer research to understand products that might serve them better.
Correct. That is correct. And with Century being a company that's into martial arts, that's making products for mixed martial arts fitness equipment, we knew that, you know, when we come up with the products that will fit our product line. So just it was more of observing them for the first day. And the second day, I kind of changed some clothes and went back in and said, maybe I should fight with these guys. Let's go see what happens in the ring. So I had some training in traditional Taekwondo, but...
You're a brave man.
hey, you got to do what you got to do to get the job done. And that's what designers are all about. I got into the ring with them, and it just led to a lot of different conversations about, you know, what is it that you need? What is it, what's going on with your training? What's bothering you? Why can't you focus on your training? Is there something that's bothering you? Some things that you use? Is it the mat? Do you need a better foam? And just different conversations, just different open questions, open-ended questions led to the conversation of, oh, I can't put my hand in my glove. It's just every day I have to go through this. Duct tape is a part of my my bag, gym bag. And, well, duct tape shouldn't be part of your gym bag. You should be able to put on something and just forget about it and go to town in your training. So that's how it happened.
So, you know, on a serious note, getting into the ring with these people that are highly trained as martial artists, why did you actually do that? What did you want to make that experience like? What were you trying to get out of it?
The most important thing was trying to not only sympathize but empathize with them, but on the other hand, also trying to live their life. What is it that they do? What is it that they feel? You really need to put yourself into their shoes. You really need to understand their feelings and their mental state when they go do the things that they really like to do. So you really want to be in that environment. You really want to be with them. And that's where you really start understanding them. And that's how you can design better products for them that will help them.
So you started with the first day of doing some observations, you know, watching these people and what they did and how they practiced and trained. And then the next day you got in the ring to be in their shoes in a very literal way, right, to have that shared experience. And it sounds like during that process you were also building some rapport and trust so that they might talk a little bit more easily about some of the problems that they encounter.
That is correct. And, you know, customer-user research is all about having that emotional connection. And I think when you are with them, when you are like them, when you behave like them, I think they develop that trust in you.
I think it's easy to look at a product such as the one you're describing, you know, gloves for martial artists that have really big hands, you know, this product, how do we get it on their hands, as this rather cold, inanimate object that's, you know, separate from ourselves, which it is. But there is this emotional aspect. I know at a different time I was talking to you about Apple products, right, that they're just very good at creating this emotional experience when you encounter an Apple product. You know, my very first iPod, when I opened that thing, it was like getting a Christmas present, right? It was just how it was packaged, and you have this emotional connection with this inanimate thing automatically. It was just a very different sort of experience than opening other products.
Yeah, I think they do a phenomenal job of instantly connecting with you when you touch that product. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's somebody's mojo that they put in everybody's each product, but it's phenomenal. You touch it and you feel like you're special. You feel like you're part of something that's very special.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that goes back to the system approach that you were talking about earlier too, right? The entire system the product operates in, right? And that customer experience.
System approach is a very interesting topic, Chad, and I believe that being an industrial designer, it gives you that education, that training to think in that manner. Yes, when you think of designers, you think of beautiful cars, Apple products, but it's a system. It's a complete system. Mm-hmm. Once you understand that, I think you think beyond just your user. You think about your manufacturing. You think about how is the product going to be completely thrown away? Is it going to end up in a garbage? Mm-hmm. Or do you think you can use that product and send it to third world countries where they could probably still use it? It may not be good for us here, but it could be just fine when you send it to some people that are way back in Africa or India or China.
Yeah, taking a much bigger view of how products fit into the world as a whole. Excellent. Thanks for sharing the story a little bit about your experience doing that field research. You know, the power of asking open-ended questions, following up with the what else, the power of observing customers and their environment, and then stepping into their own shoes, right, and having the similar experiences yourself and building trust and rapport with customers so that you can dig deeper and get some more insights and through making that emotional connection, understand maybe the emotional impact customers have with the products too, right, with what they need. I like finding innovation quotes myself. I find them motivating. What's the quote you wanted to share?
This quote has been with me for a long time. It actually is, it's nothing original. It comes from a very popular celebrity back in India. He's a cinema actor, and he comes from a very mediocre, very poor background, and now he's one of the richest people in the world. He says, if you can dream of it, you can make it happen. And when you come out of the whole celebrity, the whole fancy world, and you try to look at the real world, and you take the quote and say, if you can dream of it, you can make it happen. What does it mean? And more especially as a designer, what does it mean? The way I take it is, the way I interpret it is, if I can dream of a solution, if I can come up with a solution in a very clear, concise, and a precise manner, and put it out in a sketch, and I can start trying to solve some of the problems that my end users have and try to help them with those solutions. I think that's the starting point, is you need to dream of it first. You just can't start, nothing starts without a thought. You got to think of it, you got to dream of it. But the difference is, dream it in a very clear manner. Dream it how it's going to be made. Dream about it, what the colors are going to be. What is the material going to be? How is it going to feel when you touch it? Is it going to be smooth? Is it going to be glossy? Is it going to have a silk feeling? Or is it going to be textured? Is it going to be rugged and look like a tank? What is it going to be? Start dreaming of it. Start putting some colors. And then you put it on a paper. You start drawing. And I think that's how you make dreams come alive. That's how you try to solve other people's problems. That's how you try to come up with some good solutions.
If you can dream of it, you can make it happen. And it's breaking it down into those steps, making it more and more real to you as you go through, right? From visualizing what it looks like to sketching that out to building prototypes and moving it forward. Thank you very much for sharing that with us. It's a good, inspiring quote.
Welcome.
Just to wrap things up, I want to ask you, what was it that you wanted out of this interview too?
We started the interview with, you know, trying to understand my background, and a part of my background as being an industrial designer. I took about 2 years of training doing my master's in industrial design at Rochester Institute of Technology. What I would like, you know, the listeners from this interview is understanding that industrial design or product design is just beyond Apple, and it's beyond these fancy cars that you see. It's about the system. There are a lot of unsung heroes out there who are doing really good work. They may be in the background, but their thoughts, their process, and their solutions are really making waves. And I think understanding that industrial design or the design education, what it brings to the table when you bring an engineer, when you bring an accountant, or when you bring a process engineer to the table, I think the team is always incomplete without a good designer on the team.
Very good. And I appreciate you taking the time to share that and share some of your experiences with the audience. I also want to very much thank the audience. Thanks to everyone for listening to this discussion. And this is all about keep innovating and making us all better as product managers, developers, and innovators.
Thank you, Chad. It was fantastic.
Thank you for listening to Product Innovation Training Your Customers Will Love You For. To learn more, please check out the blog at theeverydayinnovator.com. Keep innovating.